This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, Happy New Year, and welcome to Episode 8 of NWA Crock and Roll. I am your host, Sean Kidd, and welcome to our first of two podcasts this month, and moving forward, where we'll still be looking at by month, which this month is October 85, but we're going to break it into two separate podcasts every other week, so we can kind of break things down, give you guys more of a comfortable listen, and kind of take it in and enjoy it kind of the way that we do as well. So with that, we're going to jump right into it, and I'm going to introduce my co-host. So first up, Dr. G, Happy New Year. How you doing? How are the holidays?
Happy New Year. You know what? It was nice, you know, quiet, but nice. I really enjoyed it this year. I think we all could have needed a little break from 2020 for a little while. I felt like the holiday season kind of took us away for a little while, but now we get back to reality. And what do you call it, 13th month in 2020?
I think we all have different terms for it. I'll let our guest tonight say what he said, but yeah, I'm kind of like the 13th month of 2020.
December 32nd.
December. Yeah, you can say, call it whatever you want. It's kind of like I said earlier when I was talking to you guys, I returned back to work today and it was the same exact work that I did 2 weeks ago when I left for the holidays. So nothing's really changed. So, but it's good to have you on. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying these podcasts, I hope we could take people away from that, kind of, you know, go back in time to 1985. It's been really a fun time. And, you know, I know for me, it's definitely kept me sane through all this. So I hope it does that for everyone else out there.
Yeah, me too. I actually look forward to the days we record this because I get excited talking about this stuff with you guys. So I'm glad you had a good holiday. Welcome to 2021. And now I'm going to move on to our next co-host, Colin McDougal. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. Happy New Year, Sean. Happy New Year, G, and to our guest as well. I'm glad that last year is over. It just seems like I feel less so that it's a continuation of last year. As I was saying to you guys, I'm starting to feel slightly positive for the first time in about 9 months. then it all comes crashing down when 10 minutes after I log in this morning for my first day back in 2 weeks to literally, it feels like somebody was waiting for me to log on to send me an issue, send me a problem. So back with a thud.
Well, the good news is you don't have any Wahoo McDaniel matches to watch tonight, so there is a positive for you.
Well, that is a positive. I mean, you take everything you can get just now. Any small positives, but seeing the notes for next time out, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun for you. It's not necessarily going to be fun for me.
Well, you get a freebie this pod. Next pod, not so much. The next one's my fun time. This one's yours.
I know, and a fun time it is. And as you say, we're going to do it over two. And like yourselves, I look forward to recording these. People might think it's a bit of a pain for me to do it during the night, but it's really not. I thoroughly look forward to doing these all the time. So the fact that I get to do it twice a month now is even better.
Well, and hopefully it shortens it a little bit for you so where you can go to bed at a decent hour versus 6 or 7 hours after we record one. So
I'm setting my stall out now. Instead of it being 1 4-hour, I'm gonna do everything I can in my power to make it 2 4-hour ones so I can just double the enjoyment I have.
I think you'll be the only one that'll be happy with that, Colin. But
feisty in 2021.
Yeah, a little bit, yes. All right, so Colin, welcome. And then finally, our rotating fourth horseman tonight. He is not a stranger to podcasting. He's not a stranger to Place to Be, but he is a bit of a stranger to this timeline. And We always have a running joke on our other pod about, you know, what age was this individual at certain times at certain pay-per-views we watch. But I can pretty much guarantee you in October 85, he was not even born. So with that, I would like to introduce our guest tonight, Logan Crossland. How you doing, Logan?
I'm doing fantastic, Sean, and happy Corona-tober 4th to everyone.
There it is, Corona-tober 4th. So, Logan, we're really happy to have you. Obviously, I do a couple other podcasts with you, but what I like to do is when we start off these podcasts and we have a first-time guest, I like them to kind of talk about the other podcasts that they might do on some of the sister feeds or here on Place to Be Nation, and I do two of them with you, but you're the host of definitely the host of one of them, and you're a co-host with me on another one. But why don't you tell the folks out there who might not know the other pods you do a little bit about the other podcasts you do on the feeds?
Yeah, I got you. I can't seem to escape you, Sean. I don't know what I'm going to have to do about that, but
I'm going to figure like something out. It's like a growth. It kind of grows and it kind of stays there, and you can't get rid of it. But go for it.
Yeah, I got you. But the first one me and you both do with Ben is Chicken Salad. On that one, we just kind of look at some of the worser pay-per-views in the history of wrestling in general. We've looked at some WCW. We've looked at some WWE. I'm sure down the road we'll look at some TNA and ECW and some random other, you know, maybe indie kind of shows that are kind of terrible out there. But, you know, we just kind of try to find the positives in some shows that might not necessarily have a bunch of them, but we do our best. And then I host Highway to the Impact Zone. Me and Jake do that one on every episode, and you and Ben and Lewis and Matt Souza, a couple of y'all are on every other episode, but me and Jake are on each episode. But we're going through the Impact era of TNA, and we just kind of we've been looking at the weekly pay-per-views and the weekly show Impact, but we're finally out of the weekly pay-per-views, thank God, and we're kind of just moving on to the Impact and the monthly pay-per-views now.
All right, yeah, so I definitely have a great time doing those pods with you, for sure. I know we joke a lot, and we often give each other quite a hard time on those other shows, but we are actually friends, people. We actually do get along, you know, sometimes you got to live the gimmick, but at the end of the day, we still give each other a hard time because since we're out of Christmas, I'll go ahead and say it. I'm kind of the old man to your Ralphie. And I say that with pride because I know you hate A Christmas Story, which makes it even better for me. Yeah. So, even though we give each other a hard time, we have a good time doing podcasts together. And I'm really excited to have you on. I'm trying to run the gamut of, the whole entire Highway to the Impact Zone being on this show. And I think at this point, with the exception of Lewis, I think I've had you on. So I might have to get Lewis on, but he tends to give me heart attacks. So I don't know if I'll be able to do that or not. but anyway, so Logan, real quick, I know you definitely weren't born in this time frame of October 85, but did you have any experience with Crockett or watching it on a network or anything before coming on this pod today and this watch that we're doing tonight?
You said I might not have been born. My oldest brother was just born that July, so I actually I'm not even the next child in the Crossland family to be born. So I'm about negative eight at this point. So I had watched like the Starcades and the bashes that happened in the Crockett era and all that, but I never really focused on the TV or anything like that. So yeah, this is pretty much all new. Like I knew kind of about some of the storylines that are going into the Starcade that's we're kind of leading up to in the show. So I've seen some of this before, but never like had watched and sat down and like really watched the weekly shows or anything like that.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. That's one of the greatest things about this podcast is, you know, Dr. G, myself, and Colin get to talk about this every pod, but it's always interesting to hear the outsider's perspective. And usually it's very interesting with people that haven't watched the TV because sometimes they say things or think through things that we necessarily don't come up with. So I'm looking forward to your feedback on it, whether you're shitting on it, whether you like it, feel free to just say what you think. And if I think it's a shit take, I'll call you out on it like I do on every other podcast. So, but we'll have a good time with it.
Same man. To
we'll
you.
Definitely have a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. Colin has no problem calling out my shit on Wahoo McDaniel. So I don't think you should be any different on calling out shit either. So, but anyway, so guys, with that, are we ready to get into the first half of October 85?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
All right,
let's go.
Colin, you got the kettle, the coffee, you ready to go?
It's all here.
All right, excellent. So just real quick, the first, like we always do, we'll run down the champions at this point in time. Your world champion is still Nature Boy Ric Flair. Your United States champion is still Tully Blanchard. Your Mid-Atlantic title is still vacant. It seems like it's vacant forever, but that will change hopefully in November. The National Tag Champions are still the most awesome Andersons. The World Tag Team Champions of the Rock and Roll Express. We'll have a new national champion, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Your junior heavyweight champion is Denny Brown, as we saw him regain that on our last show. And the Russians are your six-man tag team champions, and your TV champion at this point in time is still the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. So with that, we are going to go to October 5th, 1985, Mid-Atlantic TV. And up first, we have a couple segments here with Dusty Rhodes, the newly christened street people of Jimmy Valiant and Rocky King, and the Midnight Express, Jim Cornette. So our first promo is Dusty Rhodes. And as we all know, Dusty Rhodes supposedly has had Big Mama from Jimmy Valiant on loan since the Great American Bash. Now, we really haven't seen her too much. The bash was in July and we're in October, but here's how we open up the show. So Dusty's with Bob Caudle, and Bob says, "You can't start better than this." And today, the American Dream, he's in his Yankees hat. He has a white members only jacket on, t-shirt, jeans, and sunglasses. So pretty casual day for the Dream, which is interesting because I think this is the only appearance we have on the show of him tonight, and it's to do what he's about to do. He says he has a super surprise. He ain't telling no one about it and asks if the Boogie Woogie Man is here. Bob says, "Oh, yeah." And then he goes, "So the surprise is for Valiant." And then Bob gets all like disappointed because he's begging to get the surprise. But Dusty says it's for Valiant. And then Dusty goes into being the TV champion and says, "Arn Anderson, if he wants it, to come get it." Then says TA on nationwide tour all over the world. And Blanchard, he will get the U.S. belt back if it's the last thing he does in this worldwide greatest wrestling in history all over the nation. So Dusty really is something tonight in how he's wording things. And then he tells Boogeyman to get smelling sauce. He's got something for him. That goes into promo number two. We're with our newly Christian Street Brothers. If you remember our last episode, after a Midnight Express attack on Rocky King, Jimmy Valiant came in for the save and did this whole promo about Rocky and how he found him. I think he was at a Waffle House, and he was all sad, and now they're supposedly a team called the Street Brothers. The music they have for these guys is so stupid. It's canned, but it's terrible. But Big Mama's here with them, and she has the mic. She says, "Dream, we will never forget great times we had." And then Valiant, of course, is shaking up and down like an asshole, as he always does. Mama turns to Valiant, grabs him, and thrusts her crotch into him and says, "Whatever you want, you get." Valiant makes Mama – so ridiculous. He tells he calls Jim Cornette a mama's white boy bread fruitcake cornette. And he's giving your man and your street brother static. She said she will claw his eyes out. Tells the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette the Street Brothers are coming for them. So and then Valiant shakes and he claps and then he violently kisses Big Mama, and then he kisses Bob Caudle as well. So this takes us to promo number three, our final one of this segment. After the Street People win a squash match, Cornette comes out. King goes after and the Express attack the Street Brothers, and Cornette blasts Valiant with the racket in the head several times, which makes him bleed. And then Valiant convulses around like he has a stuck orgasm on the mat. So we have three different promos, all focused on the Street People, Big Mama, with Dusty kind of introing her back into the fold, and then this angle here with the Midnight Express and the Street People. So I will start with our guest first. Logan, what did you think of these three segments?
Holy cow. So I'll start with the dusty one. I think he was actually wearing a Notre Dame hat, not a Yankees hat, but
You know, I'm not a sports aficionado, so I probably screwed it up.
No, you're good. But he kind of says he has a big surprise, but he's not going to tell anybody about it. So it kind of harkens to TNA Dusty for me. So I'm starting to feel this kind of the same way I do about him on that show. But he is absolutely lit out of his mind during this promo. He either had a lot of drinks or some heavy drugs before he came out here and cut this promo.
This is a trend for Dusty promos on this show, by the way, Logan. Just FYI.
Yeah. And then my first note on the Street Brother and Big Mama promo is good God almighty. Big Mama is an absolute mess throughout this whole thing. But yeah, like you said, she kind of thrusts her crotch at him and says anything he wants, he's going to get. He calls Cornette a white loaf fruitcake. I thought that was really funny and kind of probably not PC for these days, but I thought it was pretty funny at this point. And then I made the note about him kind of violently making out with Cottle as it was kind of panning out. So and then the attack at the end of the show, I thought was really violent. The Midnight's kind of rammed King into the ring post at one point. I thought that was pretty brutal, and the racket shots that they gave Valiant were pretty good. So I was a big fan. It was just wild, and I was a big fan of all these segments.
Last episode we had a segment that was really uncomfortable. You talk about not kind of PC, and there was a promo by Cornette that we all kind of shit on that was really uncomfortable to actually read and talk about, but I feel like this one kind of progresses it a little bit. We all hate Jimmy Valiant on this show, just for the record. But I thought I think it's made its case, and I think it progressed where they want to go as we journey in the Starrcade. So I was okay with these three things too. Dr. G, your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's funny that Logan said that. You know, the one note I had was drunk, because I think everyone was drunk in all these promos, to be honest with you. The stuff that they were saying, but you know, Dusty makes it work. Yeah, even if he was hammered doing that promo, it's Dusty, you know. Like, Dusty could do anything during that time, and the fans would go crazy. And like we've said, people are just love Jimmy Valiant.
It's crazy.
I mean, the crowd goes crazy. It's amazing he didn't get more title runs, but I think he was just more of the guy that, hey, kind of keeps everybody, gets everybody up and entertained, and then had the real wrestlers come out later, you know, like he's like the warm-up act. Why? Yep. I don't know, but hey, listen, for that time. But I agree with Logan on terms of the, you know, I like the whole angle with the Midnights, you know, bashing Rocky King's head into the ring post, and then the Valiant getting beat down with the tennis racket. Again, good old-fashioned Crockett NWA wrestling, you know, just, you know, the interviews set up what's going to happen, you know, in the various shows. And I actually enjoyed the segments. I mean, you know, I'm not a big Boogie Woogie fan, but all things considered, it was better than some of the other stuff that we've seen. And it just, you know, it set up the whole thing at the end with the Midnights, you know, you know, it's funny, Sean, I don't remember this, though, from that time. I don't remember the Midnights fighting with Jimmy Valiant and Rocky King. So some of this stuff is almost like seeing it for the first time.
Well, I didn't either. I mean, I know what the end result ends up being at Starrcade 85, obviously, but I don't remember Rocky King being a cog in that wheel leading up to it. You know what I mean? So I'm with you. I didn't remember neither. This at all either. So,
But it was good stuff. I mean, I enjoyed Dusty was my favorite wrestler growing up, you know, back in those days. So, you know, I just listening to him talk, he always just made you laugh, and he was always, you know, just very animated. But the first thing I noticed, I'm like, he has to be drunk going out there doing this promo, because he was all over the place.
I feel like we get one of these, like, every episode where Dusty has one of these kind of interviews where he's kind of sloppy all over the place, and I'm highly entertained by most of them. Like,
yeah, he's doing shots backstage, shots at Jack, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm with you. I did enjoy this segment, too, like you and Logan did. Colm, what'd you think of the angle, the promos? What'd you think?
Well, first of all, Sean, thank you very much for skipping to number three. Thanks for not making us watch the Jimmy Valiant match that came before the start of that.
I go out of my way not to do that unless he's facing somebody that's worth talking about. So
you're doing the Lord's work for watching it for us to then skip over it. The last thing that I'd obviously watched on the network was TLC. So I had, because we were on the Twitch, I had the captions on. Almost exclusively did it say indistinct for when Dusty was speaking. So I thought that was very funny, and I love how this was Dusty was just on to hype the long awaited return of Big Mama, because that's what we pay our
3 months.
Today.
3 months Dusty had her, and we didn't see her once.
I'm just gonna I'll let the listeners make of that what they wish. I've got a note here. Big Mama is not a good promo. She would be. It would be helpful for her if she watched the greats like Bobby and Sherry, who just go in the background when they're trying to hype up, not stand right in front of the interviewer and the two guys that she's meant to be with to get her gyrations out. But that aside, I thought the whole thing was really good. You can't get enough of it. Like anything the Midnight Express are going to be involved in is going to be decent at worst. And to see them beat down Jimmy Valiant is always a nice way to start your watch.
Yeah. So look at that. All of us actually praised something Jimmy Valiant was involved in. I don't know if that'll ever happen again. So this is a first on NWA Crack and Roll. So
I think it was because he didn't say much other than you know. Assault Bob Caudle, and he ended up flattening his back after a beatdown.
So yeah, we like a good Valiant beatdown, and we all enjoy the convulsing. So
yeah, so I think we found the winning formula. I think it's beaten down. We'll probably enjoy it.
Well, and the Midnight Express too, because we haven't had a whole lot of Midnight Express action in this pod yet. So it's nice to kind of see them in it now. So it's good. Good stuff. All right, so our next one, not so good. And unfortunately, I had to put this one in because we have a new national heavyweight champion, and it is Terry Taylor. And we're also not very kind to Terry Taylor typically on this show, but I put it in here because it's your typical Taylor promo, and I also wanted Logan's thought on Taylor. So Taylor's here. He's the new national champ. And there's actually, on this episode of Mid-Atlantic, there are three different interviews with him in this episode, and they all say the same damn thing. Like, literally three segments this guy takes up. He's smiling, wearing a red jacket. He has some kind of animal on his breast. I don't know what it was. I said, what the fuck is it? He says this belt is the greatest thrill of his life. He babbles about hard work, and this belt is proof. He says he has to prove himself as champ with Bart Landell after him. It's the most prestigious title in the world today. Says the same thing over and over again, and then he tells everyone how much he appreciates and loves everybody. So I'm going to go to Dr. G first. What did you think about Taylor and our new national heavyweight champion?
I think like Howdy Doody. That's what I think of when I watch him. What the heck? you know how they made fun of Bob Backlund back in the day, and that's what it was like. It was just when Bob Backlund was great in the 90s when he became a heel, but back when in his face days in the old WWF. And it's just three segments on this guy. I was like, what the heck is it with Terry Taylor? He's awful.
But I kind of felt like we had to because he's a new champion. Can you imagine three freaking segments on this show with this guy?
But there was nothing to it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, where were they going with it? I mean, they definitely seemed like they wanted to highlight him because of his look. You know, he had that look that they were looking for back in the 80s. But, hey, he's a decent wrestler, but he's not great. I don't get it with Terry Taylor. Never did. He had a little run in UWF. I think back about 86, 87.
Probably his
where
best
he was a heel.
Against Chris Adams. What's that? That was probably his best run because he had a pretty good feud there with Chris Adams.
Chris Adams, yeah, he wasn't too bad there, but I just don't get it. He's just boring. He does nothing for me, and that's the words I wrote down was Howdy Doody. That's what he reminded me of.
Dr. G, he loves and appreciates you. Colin, what do you think?
it was more of the same. Like the guy has got, like, he's as dull as dishwater. He's just, there's no, at this point in time, I have seen nothing of Terry Taylor that makes me think he's got any redeeming qualities whatsoever at this point in time. When we were doing just before Christmas, Sean, me and yourself joined the Doctor on and Scott on the Saturday special, and I had Starcade Night 87 on in the background, and he was on that, obviously, and he was playing the heel on that one, just coming out of the UWF, and he was slightly better. So I think he's just horrendously miscast in this role. Nothing about him, I don't think he's got any of the qualities that, he doesn't come across as a genuine, plucky, you know, work hard and you can achieve anything, and shaking hands and kissing babies, baby face. I just don't, that's not suited for him. They obviously see something in him for them to make him predominant. I don't know if it's something that, I don't know if they're doing it for Bill Watts or anything. Somebody will need to sort of educate me on that. But there's just, yeah, there's nothing redeeming about this. I think it's just going to be more of the same until the point comes where he heads back to Mid-South, I think. If he heads back to Mid-South, I don't know where he goes next, but until he leaves Crockett, I think we're just going to have more of the same.
Yeah, you really want to hate him because he seems kind of like a smug asshole, like we've talked about. He is better in a hero role because here he is not comfortable as a babyface and gives some of the worst promos. And yeah, this is just bad. Logan, what do you think of Terry Taylor?
Terry Taylor is the man that charisma forgot. That's what I'll say about him. He talks about working hard, and he's going to have to work even harder to keep his new title that he's won. And I think about the hardest work he was doing was reading his lines off the teleprompter that were in front of him. The whole interview, it seemed like he was like getting lines fed to him from somewhere. So, but you know, he just didn't seem genuine at all, and he just completely lacks any charisma. I'm sure he's okay in the ring, but yeah, I'm just not real impressed by him, and I never really have been. And I also wrote down that he's a great value Kerry Von Erich at this point. Kind of looks like him a little bit, and kind of sounds like him even. But yeah, I'm not real impressed with Mr. Taylor.
All right, so we all agree on Terry Taylor as national champion is a big fat dud, and we are not fans of Terry Taylor. So we will move on. So I think that's the only appearance we have for him, and thank God we don't think I have any more interview segments with him even on the next episode. So he is your new national champion, so we will definitely see him again come Starcade for sure. All right, so we're going to move on. We have an Arn Anderson promo. And this is kind of the beginning where we start seeing, we saw Dusty bring it up earlier, where Arn wants to get into the TV title picture, and this is a long, drawn-out process with this TV title, and runs actually through, I mean, we're starting here in October, and this whole thing will play out all the way through January. So Arn is, you know, Arn's looking a little big, a little hairy today in his sunglasses. He says he's a national tag champ, but he puts it aside, says American Dream gets to be what he wants to be, and he gets to do what he wants to do. He says Rhodes threw in wrench in People's World by hiding the TV title in the closet. He wants a shot. He tells him to be a man, stand up and defend it. Bob says, tries to defend Dusty and says he's taken on a lot of challengers. He's a two-time champ. And Arn then questions Bob on when was the last time Dusty defended it, which honestly, he's right, because I don't think we've seen Dusty defend it once since he won it back. No one knows. He's running and hiding. And then he says he wants Dusty on national TV if he's the champion. So, Colm, I'll go to you next. I know it was a quick Arn promo, but it's also kind of Arn finally inserting himself in a singles kind of situation. What'd you think?
Well, as you say, it's Arn Anderson, so I'm never gonna criticise anything that the man ever does. But the old thing that the best heels are the ones that have got a valid point, and you hate them for having a valid point. I think we've pointed out on previous shows that Dusty's won the title, and it's just basically, it's a belt that's held up his trousers. It's not a belt that he's ever really defended. So, I mean, I think there should be, I think Arn should go to Jim Crockett and invoke the 30-day rule that he's got to defend his championship at once every 30 days. Arn versus Dusty, yes, please.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely agree with you. Logan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, on our other show on Highway to the Impact Zone, Dusty is kind of one of the worst characters we're having to deal with right now. So anybody insulting him at this point in my life, I can get along with. But yeah, Arn's awesome as always. He kind of calls Dusty out on not being the champion that he thinks he should be. And he's, you know, like you said, he's kind of inserting himself into this picture and says he wants a shot. And if Dusty's a real man, he'll come out and defend it against him.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. G?
You know, Arn's Arn. I mean, he's just awesome. Great promo. You know, he's right about Dusty. You know, again, he was my favorite at that time. But, you know, when you think about it and you're watching it back now, you know, he really didn't defend the title. And it's funny they actually put that out there, you know.
Because it was true, and I don't know how things, it was really true what he said.
It was. It was everything he said really was totally true. But because Dusty's so loved, that just made the crowd even more incensed, and they hated Arn even more.
Ric Flair was probably booking that segment.
Yeah, you know, it makes you wonder, because I don't know. I mean, you know, Arn says on his podcast that they didn't really script out their promos in those days, but I think there was definitely some bullet points, but he just nailed it. I mean, you figure the promo was maybe like a minute and 30 seconds, yeah. But he just gets his point across. You know, again, I've gained so much more respect for him watching this stuff back, because when you're a kid, you hate all the heels, you know, most people do anyway at that time. So you kind of gloss over it, but I'm watching this stuff now, and it's just, he's just brilliant. He really is. I'm anytime we can watch a little Arn, I'm happy.
And it's pretty amazing, like you bring it up. It's like they literally have set up a TV title feud within what? They did like a 30-second blip on it, Dusty's promo, and here in a minute. So in 2 minutes, they set up a TV title feud that all of us, I think, we'd want to see Arn versus Dusty. Even Colm said, yes, sign me up. So, you know, it's just simple, short booking, make your point. Now we have a TV title for you to look forward to. I think it's pretty cool. So, all right. So
simple booking.
So our next promo, and this is our final promo of this Mid-Atlantic show, is Tully and Baby Doll. And holy shit, I put down, I think Tully has the greatest outfit ever that we've seen. He has a Michael Jackson Thriller hat on, red blazer, button down white shirt. Baby Doll is in like a shiny pink coat. And Bob says, both look every bit of great. And I said, he's right. Like, I loved Tully's outfit in this. It's so great. He calls Baby Don, Tully calls Baby Don not only perfect 10, but she's also the perfect woman in the world. Says, and then again, it's kind of like, here we go, back to the Hawaii thing. Says, Dusty in Hawaii got the bad end of the stick. He asked Dusty if he's paid his bills yet, and says his buddy Magnum TA is paying all his bills. It sticks in his craw when he sees him with the U.S. belt. He tells TA his road is ending. There are others who deserve a shot, and he brings up Garvin and Taylor and several others who deserve a shot at the gold. Dusty, Billy Graham, Arn and Ole, his friends. He complains about always seeing TA's name with his lawyer when he looks into contracts. He's saying he might beat me at odds and numbers, but that's why his road is coming to an end, and it's going to be a surprise for him, Jack. So what I really liked about this promo for me is, one, I'm gushing over the outfit because it's so 85, but what I really liked is – he's right again. We've only seen Magnum versus Tully. It's time to move on. Tully's like, I'm tired of fighting this guy. I'm going to face other challengers. And again, it's a heel being right in his mind and on paper is right. So I thought that was kind of cool. So Logan, what'd you think about Tully and Baby Doll?
You were talking about how much you like Tully's outfit. I thought his hat was absolutely absurd. It kind of looked like he was about to go put some lederhosen on and go yodeling out
in the
mountains.
I loved it so
somewhere.
Much.
But yeah, he calls her the perfect 10 and the perfect woman. But yeah, he's completely crapping on Magnum TA the whole time, and he even gets some pot shots in Dusty. But yeah, I thought it was kind of cool that he kind of mentioned other challengers that he could face, because you know, most of the time heels kind of try to avoid kind of facing anybody at any time, especially you know, stiff competition. And he was open to facing pretty much anybody else other than Magnum TA. Yeah, I really like this one from Tully, and yeah, but his hat was a little absurd.
Absurd on this show when it comes to fashion is a good thing, so it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah,
but you know, and this is kind of like one of the tropes that we've seen. We talked about on a couple episodes here is how he names all the challengers, and the heels are always putting the shine over on their challengers. And because at the end of the day, when they beat those challengers, it makes them look better because they actually talk them up, which is a strategy that Crockett uses, which is really good. And I also like Dr. G. I think it's kind of the first sign of where we're going to end up at Starrcade here, because we're talking about Magnum no longer being a challenger, and you know, he's tired of facing him. And this kind of leads to an angle down the road where it's kind of like Tully has to defend it in one more match that we'll see play out over the next few months. But what did you think of this promo?
You know, you're so right with Tully again. First of all, he looked funny in the outfit he was wearing. It was so different from what he normally
does.
That's
why I think it popped me. It's so different for him.
But in regards to his promo, I mean, he again, a heel that is right in what he's saying. You know, it's always Tully, Magnum, and you know, he's purposely doing that just to again get the crowd, you know, like really heated about it. But I like the way he does talk up his challengers. So again, when he beats them, it means something. And Dusty just gets pulled into everything. It's amazing. And that's probably why he doesn't defend the television championship, because he's like in every feud. I never really knew much about bookers and all this stuff back then. So, you know, he obviously wielded a lot of influence in those days. So he was pretty much in almost every feud, it seemed like. I mean, he even gets involved in the Valiant feuds, you know. So it's like but that's – I think that was a Crockett way of doing things, because, hey, your biggest star, you know, sprinkle a little dusty dust, if you want to call it that, everywhere. You know, insert them all these feuds, so this way it brings even more interest. But Tully is just, again, if I had to judge between Tully and Arn, I like Arn's promos better, but Tully's right there. Tully's right there. I mean, he's just, you know, he he's the guy you just want to punch in the face when he's done doing that promo, because he's just so arrogant and he gets his point across, and he just really, he really gets a feud to a point where you can't wait to see that match. And that's basically, you know, building up to Starrcade. You know, even though he says he doesn't want to face Magnum anymore, it makes you want to see it even more and more, even though they have faced each other a bunch of times.
Yeah, it is. He's just really good at selling. This challenger is really good at selling. You know there's going to be another match between him and TA, because he's basically saying he's tired of it. So, you know, it's not over yet. So just simple booking, simple things.
You could tell
say
that his dad was a promoter, you know,
absolutely.
So he learned a lot from his father.
Yep. Absolutely. So that'll end our Mid-Atlantic episode. So now we're going to move on to October 11th, 1985. So, a couple episodes ago, we had our special episode where we did the September super special, and really highlighted Ric Flair and his world title travels. He went to Florida, he went to Puerto Rico, then he went to Chicago and defended his belt three times. It continues here. So Mid-South is not really technically part of the NWA, but they recognize Ric Flair as their world champion. And Ric Flair is here in Houston defending his title, the world NWA world title, against the number one contender in Mid-South, and that's Hacksaw Butch Reed. And most of us know Butch Reed from WWF as the natural Butch Reed with the dyed blonde hair, et cetera, et cetera. But here, he's one of the biggest faces in Mid-South, and him and Flair have a lot of issues. So it was kind of cool to track this match down with Ric Flair defending his world title yet again. So Ric Flair is just absolutely a traveling world champion. After September, here he is in Houston, and we actually have a couple matches on our next pod where he's actually in Japan, which I look forward to talking about. So the true world champion here. So we're going to talk about the match, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. So it's Ric Flair versus Butch Reed for the world title. And as I said, Reed is your top contender for Mid-South. A cool little nugget I thought was cool was, did anybody notice Bruce Pritchard was the one that took his robe from ringside? Did you guys notice that?
I did notice that.
Didn't notice that, no.
Yeah. So a young Bruce Pritchard. So the bell rings. Reed immediately sticks up his fists up, and Flair complains about the fist. They eventually lock up. Reed shoves Flair's down. They lock up, and then they exchange hammerlocks into a rope break. There's a third lockup. Reed with a wrenching headlock takes Flair over for a two count. Flair rolls Reed a few times over for two counts while stuck in the headlock. There's a test of strength, which Reed wins and goes back into the headlock. There's a rope break in a corner. Flair with a shoulder block and a chop. It fires Reed up, and Flair bails out of the ring. There's yet another lockup, so there's just kind of a lot of back and forth, kind of stalling kind of scenarios going on. But they lock up. Flair chops Reed, and Reed cocks fists, and ref holds him back. There's another hookup, and Reed shoulder blocks, hip tosses, and press slams Flair. Yet another hookup. Reed goes into a bear hug in the corner. Reed punches Flair and goes down for two. Flair gets his knee out. He chops into an arm lock. Reed escapes with several punches, and then yet another bear hug. So a lot of just really kind of the first 10 minutes is just tons of bear hug, a ton of pin attempts and things for Flair just to kind of work with the face here. So kind of really boring. It's really annoying. It feels like he's not really letting Reed do anything. Flair gets several chops. Reed with more punches. He misses an elbow. Reed gets two count on a backslide. Flair gets atomic drop to knee, taking Reed down. I always think it looks cool when Flair does that atomic drop to the knee. It looks pretty vicious. Flair pulls leg several times into figure four. Reed reverses it, but Flair breaks the hold. Flair goes for another figure four attempt, but Reed small packages for two. Flair throws Reed out of the ring. On apron, Flair chops Reed multiple times. Sunset flip, and Reed gets two. Reed with a sleeper, and he's wrenching it really good. A Reed splash is blocked by Flair's knees, chopped by Flair, headlock into leg lock, flip over bridge for a backslide spot for two count. More chops and punches are exchanged. Ref goes down on a rope toss. There's a small package by Reed, but there's no ref. Flair throws Reed over the top rope. Reed pulls himself back in, flying shoulder tackle on Flair. Flair goes to the top, but gets nailed on the way down. A figure four by Reed, and the bell rings. The ref makes Reed break the hold, and Reed thinks he's won, but it's a DQ for the over-the-top and for hitting the ref. Reed grabs the ref to punch the ref, and that kind of ends the match. So kind of the first half of this I found really boring and kind of just stagnant, but I thought the closing 5 to 10 minutes was pretty good. So I will go to – who do we got first? Dr. G, what did you think of this match between Reed and Flair?
You know it was a typical Ric Flair match. I mean, you know, he always went into the territory, made their, top face look good in a match. Typical ending that you would see in those days back in the NWA. I thought it was pretty good. I'd give it 2.5 stars.
Yeah, that's what I put. It was 2.5 too. That's what I put.
No, nothing. Butch Reed was okay. I mean, there was nothing bad about the match. It just wasn't, it wasn't something like, oh my gosh, I want to go watch this again sometime, go to the network and watch it again type of thing. But it was one of those matches I didn't mind watching. And I thought, I picked up on the Bruce Pritchard thing with the robe. I thought that was kind of funny. Wow, he had to be in his early 20s at that time.
If that, but might have been 18, 19, maybe. I'd have to look.
Yeah, it's true. But it was a pretty good match. Again, Flair is one of the best of all time. But there were times, because I saw him a lot, in different territories, because I got so much wrestling when I was a kid. There is a typical style to a Ric Flair match. So it was kind of one of those where, I kind of seen this already, just with a different opponent. So that's why it didn't really stand out that much to me.
Well, and I think it was either Ole Anderson, I think even Bret Hart at one point said Flair wrestles the same match every town he's in. And it's interesting because we've tracked down a lot of Flair matches over the last few months, and it's been really strange to watch because I do see him wrestling different styles with different people, though. I do see him in a lot of the same tropes, but you do see him wrestle different styles, which I've appreciated because I haven't seen a whole lot of Ric Flair outside of the NWA. So seeing him in these other situations like Mid-South and Puerto Rico, it's really cool to see him wrestle different styles with people, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like this style match was with a guy that was like, Butch Reed was
a brawler.
So yep. So if you watch matches with other brawlers, they had that similar outline to it, you know, of the way they're going to do things. And then, yes, if he's wrestling somebody like a Kerry Von Erich, you might see a little bit of a different match. And this is not criticism. This guy wrestled, 400 times a year. I mean, you can't get something different every single time out. But that's the reason why I didn't give it more than 2.5 stars. And again, it was not all Flair. I mean, Butch Reed is very limited, so there was not much more that he was going to be able to do. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the match. It wasn't something I was like, oh gosh, let's just turn this thing off. I thought, it was definitely one of those matches where I enjoyed watching it.
Well, put it in perspective. If you go back to 2 episodes ago, this is Flair's 4th title defense in the last 30 to 35 days that we've watched. So pretty impressive that we've seen him 4 times and 4 world title defenses in that time frame. So unlike Dusty Rhodes, who can't seem to defend his TV title. So, Colin, what'd you think?
I liked the psychology of the match. Early doors, which they set out, that Flair was, initially, it looked as if Flair was trying to get Butch to lose his temper and potentially get himself disqualified or make a mistake. I don't think it's fair to Flair, to coin a phrase, to say that he wrestled the same match all the time, as you guys said, because we've seen him try his best with some scrubs last month. I'm talking more about, before anyone jumps in, I'm talking more about Hercules Ayala than Wahoo.
I was waiting for the Wahoo jab. You swerved me.
I did. When you're working with nothing, you're starting from zero. It's hard to pull a good match there. And Butch Reed, I think Butch Reed's a lot better than I give him credit for. Because I think he held his. Yes, he's a brawler, and the moveset wasn't the most varied that you've ever seen, but he certainly held his end of the bargain up.
Yeah, and we didn't see much of him from a wrestling style in the WWF, so if all you've seen is WWF Reed or maybe WCW 90 Doom Reed, then you probably haven't seen the best Butch Reed, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that is all my experience of him was watching the classic WWF on and then Doom period on the classic wrestling you'd got on Sky Sports, so I've never seen anything pre-87 of him. So he's certainly a lot better than I gave him credit for. To put a modern spin on it, when they were in the bear hug on the mat had all sorts of bodily fluid on it. So these guys don't need to worry about what's in the COVID vaccine if they survived wrestling on that. That's a staph infection waiting to happen right now. What else have I got here? The Flair right at the very end, the desperation thrown over the top rope. I thought just doing anything he can. It's not about so much about winning as it is about surviving. I thought, as much as I didn't particularly like the finish, I thought it was pretty poor. But I liked the desperation of Ric Flair. I couldn't quite understand it in my own head, so I do apologise if I'm not making much sense. But I liked the desperation of Flair throwing him over the top rope. I didn't like the finish. I thought it was just one of these things that he could have picked up the wind because the referee didn't see it. I know I'm probably not making a lot of sense, but I gave it 2.5 as well.
Okay.
I thought the last 10 minutes of the match was miles better than the 45 minutes of Flair Wahoo we got last month.
I disagree with you on that. Then we're going to move on to Logan. Logan, what did you think of this match?
Yeah, I kind of share a lot of y'all's sentiments. It was kind of really boring at the beginning, but it picked up towards the end. Reed was an absolute just brick shit house. He was jacked back then, and
at one point, it's like his head goes into his shoulders. It's weird.
Yeah, but he's huge, and he has a hammerlock at one point on Flair, and I legitimately think he could have ripped Flair's arm off if he really tried. And then right after I made that note, I think Paul Bosch is calling this match, and he says something about when he has him in a headlock, he thinks he can rip his head clean off. So I thought that was pretty funny that I made that note, and he immediately said that afterwards. But
the great Paul Bosch commentary, right?
Oh, it was awful.
Yeah.
Well, great's one way to describe it, I guess. But yeah, the whole match has kind of worked around. Flair's trying to kind of frustrate Reed into doing something that he shouldn't by chopping him constantly, and he keeps trying to punch him. The one thing that bothered me a little bit about it, and it kind of fits my gimmick, the ref was like way too concerned about Reed having a closed fist, and then when he eventually decks him, he doesn't really do anything about it, so I thought that was kind of weird and annoying, but that's just me focusing way too much on the referees. But yeah, the last couple of minutes of it is just really good. Flair's really good in it, and I'm kind of with Callum. I didn't love the finish, but I kind of understand why it had to go that way. But I went a little lower than you guys. I only went 2 stars on it, but it was mostly because of how the finish happened and kind of the boring part of the first little bit of the match.
No. That's fair. So, but you know, we got a world title match, so we got to watch something that probably I've never seen this match before ever. So that's part of what cool thing about researching these episodes is that I get to watch things that I've never seen before and kind of take them in as a new onlooker. So I think that's what was cool for me. So with that, Flair's defending.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm definitely glad I got to watch that one for sure. I haven't really seen much of Flair kind of touring around the world and facing all kind of different people, so it was definitely interesting.
Yeah, so with that, we know Ric Flair is in Houston, and now we're going to go to the day after this match took place, October the 12th, 1985, and our second week that we're going to look at this episode is Mid-Atlantic, and we're going to open up with a very interesting Dusty and Arn Anderson promo. So Tony Schiavone is out with Bob Caudle, and Tony isn't typically on Mid-Atlantic. He's on the Worldwide. He's on the Saturday Night Show. And Bob said he's heard upsetting news on Dusty. Tony says it is. Says he just returned from Kansas City with NWA President Bob Geigel. Says Dusty has a serious injury from Flair. The NWA has the tape but is not released yet. But I came back with a portion, and then they show a tape of a cage being taken down. The ring handlers are taking it down. The turnbuckles, the Rock and Roll Express, TA, and Taylor are all in the ring with Dusty, and he's out. David Crockett's there, too. They lift Dusty up, and camera pans a Dusty face who sells the pain. It really seems real, and it felt legit. Like they pulled the curtain back a little bit with the reality feel. Fans all look stunned and worried. Tony says Dusty went to the hospital on a private plane where doctors saw him. Left foot is in a cast. Nature of the injury is unknown. However, doctors say Dusty's career is in severe jeopardy. Next week, the NWA will release full tape, and we will talk to Dusty and his doctor. Then there's a second promo, and it's with Arn. And Arn, it's kind of the same thing Arn talked about the last time. He puts his national tag aside. He says, I hear Dusty fell on some misfortune. Bob Caudle says, you may have something to do with that. Arn says, I'll leave that one alone, and he gives Dusty his condolences. But I am the number one contender for the TV title. He says, in NASCAR, you have a wreck. You pull aside and continue the race. The boxing, TKO, at a TKO, you go to the shower and you come back again. Baseball, you know, it rains, but the team ahead always wins. As the number one contender, Arn Anderson is claiming the TV title. It's mine, as Dusty can't defend it. I want everyone to recognize it starting now. Dusty no longer is the champ. I am. I'll defend it against everyone. It has been your pleasure, and he walks away. So we will start with Column on this one. Pretty big moment here in Crockett NWA that sets off the journey for the main event to Starrcade. So what did you think of kind of Tony's insight on what happened and kind of that tease they gave us for next week? And what did you think about Arn's follow-up promo? So Column, you go.
I think it was excellently presented. You get to your point, you never ever see Tony on Mid-Atlantic. So if he's coming in to give you some information, you know that it's pretty important, because he's making an appearance that he normally wouldn't. It looked right at the very start, you could tell something was up, because he was looking very stern when he was there. And then my next point is, no wonder he had to go to Central States, the poor bugger. But the next one it's a great tease for next week. You need to know it's because they were despite Tony being there, he wasn't giving a lot away, because I think we will see that it's a picture that tells a thousand words. The promo with Arn after that is I think I should just get myself a soundboard to save me saying it all over again. But the promo from Arn was excellent. Bob Caudle goes like that, "I hear you were involved, Arn," and he just goes, "Ah, I know, we won't be talking about that," and just blows
he
right
knows
over.
Sells it. He totally knows sells it.
Oh, it's brilliant. And it's like that, in the absence of evidence, it's like innocent until proven guilty. As Arn Anderson goes, "I don't know, talking about that. I want the TV title." And it was just, and the bit where he's just going, "It's the TV title. It should be defended on TV. I am declaring myself champion." It was just, it's wonderful. It was just superb.
All right. Very good. So I agree. I think it sets up a great angle. Logan, what'd you think?
I kind of agree with a lot of what Callum said. I love Serious Tony in the first part, kind of talking about the video and all that it was going on. I kind of thought it was weird that they didn't show the whole video, but I understand that they're trying to plug and get people to tune back in next week to see the whole thing. So it's kind of smart by them to do that. And Arn actually says something to the effect of that Dusty has fallen on hard times, so I kind of wondered if that planted the seed in Dusty's head to kind of use that line when he comes back eventually in his famous promo that he's going to cut in a couple of months, or right, maybe even next month, honestly. But yeah, I love Arn's intensity and love him just constantly shitting on Dusty, and he kind of expects to be given the title, so love that promo by Arn, and he's awesome as always.
All right. And Dr. G, probably some big memories for you on this one, because this is kind of a big deal.
Well, you know, it's funny, Logan, great, great catch on the hard times thing. I what did you think about that, Sean? I thought that was pretty
pretty good. Definitely.
You know, because I wrote that down, because I never realized that it was said by Arn before that, mm-hmm. Before, you know, Dusty did the promo. So, again.
I didn't either. That was a very good catch.
Very good. I mean, and I did write that down. I didn't think anybody was going to catch that. Maybe Sean, I would have thought catch, but good catch.
I did not catch it.
I have to say, that was really, really.
You needed a young ear.
Oh, there you go. Oh, well, smart ass.
That's smart ass.
I'm just playing.
I tell you, though, this, I loved. The one thing I loved when I remember as a kid with the NWA is the seriousness when they had these angles like this. You know, Tony Schiavone comes out and they always mention the NWA president, Bob Geigel. You know, they just made it seem so like official and serious, and you just had that feeling like, oh, you know, some shit really went down here. This is very serious. And you know, it's funny because, you know, WCW back with the NWA, NWO gets such credit for using that realism in wrestling. But, you know, as I'm going back and I'm watching this, you know what? They were doing this back in the 80s. I mean, you know, showing the footage of taking down the ring and taking down the cage so they could get Dusty out. I mean, you know, they basically, you know, played along with this whole thing through, you know, what was it, 15, 20 minutes of sitting with Dusty in the ring acting like he's really hurt. You know, it's just the time and the effort they put into these angles really are amazing if you think about it.
Yeah, and, I mean, it was realistic. This was so real to me. Watching it, it felt like you were there and it was realistic. You'd never see something like this in the WWF, ever.
No, and you didn't have to, like, you know, have these staged things to do it. It was, you know, it was just part of the whole night, and they just worked it in, and everybody did their part, and you didn't have to use special effects or anything crazy. It was just a realistic event. You know, again, like I said at the last podcast, I don't want to sound like, you know, these old guys, oh, you don't like the new wrestling. You know, because you know what? Things do evolve, and you need to evolve. But some of this simple booking, I just wish they would go back and watch some of this stuff and just add it in here. You know, you could bring back wrestling angles with different people. It happens in wrestling all the time. You think that something like this has never happened before? I mean, they do this stuff in all the territories. Now, it was a little easier back then because you didn't have the internet and YouTube and all that stuff. But I know it's a little harder today. But this stuff was just basic wrestling 101, and I love it. Sean, it's bringing back such memories for me. I just remember all this, and I'm like, I'm enjoying it. It's really building up for the next month or two, which we're really going to enjoy.
Well, I remember the angle with the cage, and we'll hear more about it when we get to the 19th, but I don't remember Arn and this journey for him going after the TV title. So this part of it's new to me because I don't remember any of Arn. I remember Arn being involved in what happened. I don't remember him going so hard after the TV title at this point, which is great because now I not only do I have Arn in one of my favorite tag teams, now I'm going to get Arn as singles guy. So
I agree with you. I agree with you, Sean, on that because you know why? Again, look at all the different angles that are going on during this time. And Dusty was in so many of them that I could, you know, it did. You're right. I don't remember this run by Arn as much as I'm seeing now. Now I'm kind of getting more of appreciation for it because, you know I watched a lot of wrestling back in those days. So you watch all these different shows and everything just melds in. And again, you have a different mind when you're, you know, really younger. So, you know, than you do now. And you know, now we're really dissecting everything. So this has been fun. This little journey with Arn against Dusty has been a lot of fun.
I agree with you. So with that, we're going to have a quick go into Tully and TA a little bit. So Tully's out this time. Looks a little different this time, but kind of a Yacht Rock kind of blazer he's wearing, and Baby Doll's in black and sequins. Baby Doll, her outfits always seem to kind of, at some point or another, I feel like she wears the same outfit over again in certain promos. But anyway, she kind of blends in. He says, it might be a surprise to some, but I am still the U.S. champion. It's been a hard road. He brings up Magnum TA and the contracts again. He says, TA, man to man, I'm taking a vacation of 30 days. And TA, there's one contract left, and that's all you get, Magnum. One more time. I've done every match he's wanted, and I'm still champ. TA, I'm tired of looking at you. Others deserve a shot. This belt brings money, and facing me brings money. TA, and then he says, TA, adios. I'm taking a 30-day vacation. The second promo, TA's out, you know, wearing the same thing TA always wears, his black vest and blue jeans. He says there's a serious situation now with one shot left. He doesn't consider Tully getting beat up in the back of the building being successful defending anything. Tully stole the title, which we've all covered pretty much in detail. And now I don't know lawyers or NWA, but I have the title. I want the title, and I won't stop until I get it done. He gets the lawyers, get the steps. Fact is, I'm the rightful owner, and then he discusses Dusty's injury. And then he calls out Flair, calls out Tully. Dusty will come back, and Flair will deal with you when the dream comes back. So going around the horn, what did you think? Tully's going on vacation to continue this angle. Then you have Magnum come out and say, yeah, there's really only one more shot left. So kind of a serious situation at this point. Logan, what did you think about Tully and Magnum TA?
Yeah, I love that Tully kind of said he was going on vacation, was like, I'm tired of you. I'm going to do something else for a little while. But yeah, I like that TA kind of has one more shot, and it's if he loses this one, then like he won't get any more shots at Tully. So that's a really good way to kind of start build, or really a good way to build this storyline heading into their eventual title match. And you know, Magnum kind of stumbled out of the gate in his promo, kind of messed up some words at the beginning, but he got really fired up, and I really liked his fire when he was talking about getting back the belt that was rightfully his. And I love how he was able to kind of take that fire and transition it into some kind of sympathy for his friend Dusty at the same time. So that was really good that he kind of transitioned from one emotion to the other and kind of got fired back up when he said Dusty's coming for Flair whenever he gets healthy.
All right. Dr. Z, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, just Tully and TA, really, what a great matchup of guys that really, you really felt like these two hated each other. And not only was it for the championship, which obviously they always make their belts seem mean something, it was they really just couldn't stand each other. And, Tully's like, you know what, I'm going on vacation. I had enough of you. I'm done. I've beaten you now. I'm ready to move on to something else. And TA is like, no, it's my time here. And I'm going to win this belt back one way or another. And I agree with Logan, a little slip up, and we've said that TA is definitely getting better. Logan, we were watching him some months back and we kind of really were ripping Magnum TA. But as the months went on, his promo skills got better. He really grew into the role that we inevitably he was supposed to be, the number one guy. And we could see why now. But he wronged it. He fixed his mistakes in the beginning of the promo, and he seemed very fired up. And what I'm liking about TA is you're seeing that intensity now, because you could see Tully can't stand TA. Now you're seeing TA is like, all right, I had enough of this guy. I want to beat the hell out of him now. I want my belt back, and I'll do whatever it takes to get my championship back. And just good stuff. Good. Old-fashioned booking 101.
Definitely seeing that signs of what's coming for Starrcade. So I love how they're building these feuds. It's just fantastic. Colm, what'd you think on Tully and TA here?
I thought they were two great promos. I loved it, Tully going. Again, just building on the previous one. Where he was like, I see my bookings is Magnum, Magnum, Magnum. So I've worked it out. You've got one last shot. And obviously knowing it's fairly well known where this goes. And it's even the Magnum promo, it's not quite, there's still some things that I'm not quite sure how we get there and how we get to the eventual end goal that we do. So I'm loving seeing it all build up, and this is again. I've seen the end point, but I'm loving that I'm getting to live how we get to that end point as if it's brand new. So this is that's one of the things I am enjoying most about this. I'm getting to live it as it was, as almost as if it was happening. I thought Magnum's promo was good as well, and I thought it was also a good use at the end of Magnum's promo to move on Flair and Dusty as well, without sort of going over the top. It showed that it highlighted the severity of what happened to, or what they're teasing has happened to Dusty. So I thought, I thought it was two more good promos for this feud.
So Colm, I think I accidentally missed you on the last Tully promo, and I apologize. But what did you think of Tully's outfit with the hat and the wear he was wearing? He's not normally in those clothes. What did you think of what he was wearing in that promo that we talked about earlier?
It was absolutely superb. I think we have wrapped up who's gonna win the Fashion Plate Award for this month. I think everyone else is playing for second place, I think now.
I think it might be my favorite outfit ever, and I'm probably gonna get shit on for that because I know Logan thought it was ridiculous, but I thought it was great. I'm glad you agree with me on that.
I'm now thinking that I don't have enough maroon in my wardrobe. I certainly don't have enough fedoras. So no, I think the whole thing was just magnificent.
And honestly, I would like to see Dr. G pull that outfit off, actually.
The hat was really the only thing I had the problem with. The rest of the outfit was great.
I see Dr. G wearing that outfit in the mid 80s.
Yeah, you think that?
if Tommy,
that'd be interesting. I definitely would take a lot of abuse from Scott if he saw me wearing that.
Are you kidding me? I'd see Chris Golo in some Ric Flair wear. There's no way you'd give him give you shit. He'd be right there with you.
I tell you, that is one way. That is one way that I think they would get me to watch Dynamite every week, is if Tully Blanchard came out dressed like that every week, every Wednesday night. Yeah. If Tully Blanchard
and Arn Anderson came out in his 80s cocaine sunglasses, I'd be all in.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
We'd be marking anyway. Out. Come on.
Well, I'm marking out just talking about it. So, Colin, I'm sorry I missed you on that, but I definitely wanted to get your opinion on it. So
don't worry about it. I didn't want to let you know, and you know, your old age, your memory's going a wee bit. So.
Well, quite honestly, our youngster reminded me in our group chat. So, Logan, thank you for calling me out on that, and I was able to go back and get you. So I'll thank Logan for that. I have to give him the credit.
No problem.
He knows my oldness very well because he has to deal with me like 3 times a month. So. All right. So our next promo, I know you guys are going to love talking about this because we're talking about show favorite Paul Jones. And last episode, we kind of saw Billy Graham coming back out. He's turned face, and now he's looking like Billy Graham did before Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan, and now Billy Graham's going back to looking like Billy Graham pre-Hogan, but now he looks like Hulk Hogan. Again, just as confusing as when I explained it the first time. So Billy's out, but before he can talk, Jones comes out, says Billy Graham has a contract and has to do what he says. He says the party's over. I don't like your attitude. Graham calls Jones a liar, and he lives in a fantasy world. He rips up the contract, tells him to shove it where you know where, and he walks away. And the main reason why I love this promo, because this is a classic Jones losing his mind, screaming, don't leave me. This contract is legal, and he just – like totally furious like he was with the Boogie Kid. So we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this. Dr. G, what did you think about this obvious, we're heading somewhere down the road with Jones and Graham. We don't know where yet, but what did you think of this short little promo?
Yeah, I mean, you know, typical, I just love watching Paul Jones get upset, though.
He's a favorite of mine. Funny. When he loses his shit, he's just great.
He just plays the role so well. You know, again, this is another thing, and I'll just say this real quick. I don't remember all this Billy Graham at this time. I really don't. Now, I remember him in Florida, and I think he was in Florida around, I want to say, 83, 84, somewhere around there, maybe even part of 85. But I don't remember this run like this in Crockett. I really don't.
The last one I remember is Karate Graham. I don't remember this kind of rejuvenation. I don't remember this at all either.
I don't either. So I thought he rejuvenated all that when he went back to WWF, with Morocco. So, again, they're trying to pump up Graham, but I think just Graham at this point was kind of past his prime. And, but Jones, I just love watching Jones freak out. It's hysterical.
Yep. Colin, what'd you think?
I've written down what you were saying right at the start. Here's superstar Billy Graham imitating Hulk Hogan, who to begin with imitated superstar Billy Graham. I think they got this fine. It was short and sweet. That's how Billy Graham should be used. Nothing much else. I mean, Paul Jones is trying his best, but he's going to have a tough time with Billy Graham. But if you keep it short and sweet, I suppose it's going to be inoffensive.
Okay. I feel like, again, I think I said it on the last spot, I feel like they're trying to make they're Hulk Hogan, but he looks like 20 years older than Hogan does at this point. He just looks really terrible and pruney and you can just tell he's just roided out. Logan, I'd love this. Logan, what did you think of superstar Billy Graham? I assume you don't have much exposure to him at all.
No, not really. Just that awful commentary performance at SummerSlam that one year. when he says brother about 8 million times. But yeah, I think Superstar's well past his expiration date at this point, and he's kind of, yeah, like I said, kind of a Hulk Hogan ripoff, even though Hulk Hogan's kind of a ripoff of him to start off with. But yeah, Jones kind of came off like a goon in this segment, but I thought it was pretty funny how he freaked out, and his suit was straight out of the Dumb and Dumber Lloyd Christmas collection.
Oh, the ruffle! Yeah, yeah, that's a famous Jones trope. He does that all every episode.
Yeah, but yeah, it was really funny how he freaked out, but he seems like kind of a goon to me throughout the segment. But yeah, I liked it.
Okay, cool. So we'll end. So we're gonna end this episode, and then we're gonna go to break before we finish our final watch of this particular episode. So we actually have a match scheduled between the Street Brothers and the Midnight Express to follow up from last week. The Cornette enters the Midnight Express, and you know, when you look at the Midnight Express's ring gear, they're not real impressive. It kind of looks like they're like their vests and everything are sewn in Mama Cornette's basement. It's not real flashy. But I guess they don't have to be because they get the job done in the ring. Then music fires up, and it's literally this, like, country, what I put, country lovemaking music. And the crowd goes absolutely ballistic as Big Mama comes out in a yellow belly shirt. Her nips are, like, all, like, just poking out. She's wearing cheetah pants. She definitely looks like the kind of girl to be Valiant's prostitute, so she fits the mold. She introduces her main men to Street People. They run in street clothes. They run into street clothes. Hang on, I lost my notes, guys. Sorry. They run into street clothes and they just start fighting with the they both hit elbows. They send a Midnight Express out of the ring. Cornette takes off and then the Express runs off. So we don't really get a match that starts here, but the crowd is absolutely nuclear for the Street People and Big Mama. And Bob pimps Big Mama and her Street People as they go off the air. I just cannot get over how over the Valiant and Rocky King. I just can't. It's crazy how over they are. It's just, I can't even wrap my head around it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So, Logan, I'll start with you. What did you think of this?
Yeah, the way I described the music when they were coming out was a depressing country tune. It just kind of was like a slow country little tune that they came out to. But yeah, they came out and got revenge for the previous week's attack. And, yeah, it's wild how crazy the crowd gets during this segment. They're just off the chain, so they're really behind the Boogie Woogie Man and his buddy. So, I thought it was crazy, and I like how they kind of got a little bit of revenge for the previous week.
Yep, we didn't get a match, but they definitely got revenge, so they're definitely building to something. Colin, what did you think of this?
The popularity of Jimmy Valiant continues to just baffle me.
It really should be studied. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, I think that there is certainly if there's any anybody out there listening who is looking, who may well be in the psychology field, feel free. I am willing to help on any research you have. Because if you wish to study why Jimmy Valiant is so popular, please let us know. Answers on a postcard, please, because I do not understand it. It is the strangest phenomenon. That's all that can be described as. It's just a strange phenomenon as to why the man is as popular as he is. But again, short and sweet. So best use of Jimmy Valiant, in all honesty.
I agree. It just blows my mind. Dr. G, do you remember? I know you say you didn't remember any of this stuff with Rocky King and the Street People and all that, but I'm sure you remember Big Mama, and you've already brought up these crazy ass crowds when it comes to Valiant. So what were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, Big Mama, I kind of remember, but you know, we're talking about the psychology of why people like Jimmy Valiant. I was trying to figure it out. I was like, well, you know, maybe the heels are so good that he's over because of that. But, you know, they get excited for him when he's just coming out to the ring. It's not necessarily because of his matches. So, I can't figure it out. But it's kind of like, you know, the Bushwhackers in the WWE. Like, you know, people went crazy for them. You know, why? you know, I remember Luke and Butch being, you know, crazy, you know, like they wanted bloodbaths and, you know, crazy heels, and they come to the WWE and they're like, you know, cartoon characters. So, and people went crazy for it. But why? I don't, what was the appeal? Was they didn't really appeal to me. You know, they were appealing to probably kids a little younger at that time. But, you know, so in terms of this whole thing, but the one thing I did like about this was, you know, again, keep the storyline going, whether we want to see the storyline with the Street Brothers or not, that's one thing, but they kept the storyline going by, okay, now they got their revenge, so now we're going to set it up for probably a bigger match. And again, they had a theory to their booking and they always stick to it, and you're starting to see how Crockett does things. And not saying that it's not without, you know, with some mistakes and some flaws, but they do have a certain formula, and at this time, you know, it's really, really working.
Yeah, it's definitely working. The fact that I'm invested in a Jimmy Valiant feud is something else. So, exactly. So with that, yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. But with that, we're going to end our October 12th watch. We are going to take a break. On the backside of this, we're going to talk about the week of 10-19 and then wrap this show up. So I'm Sean Kidd with Colin McDougall, Dr. G, and our guest Logan Crossan, and we'll be back on the other side.
Say
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the second half of NWA Crack and Roll, October 85, Part 1. We have gone through October the 5th and October the 12th, and now we're going to wrap up this episode with October the 19th. So we're going to open it up with Mid-Atlantic from this weekend, and we're going to follow up from the last episode where Tony had come out and talked about something bad had happened to Dusty. Tony is back out with Bob, as promised, to show the tapes, and then what you're seeing is Ric Flair has just defended his world title against Nikita Koloff in a cage match, which is really cool for us, Dr. G and Colin, because if you remember, we watched a match from the same exact place, the Omni, back in August, where Flair defended against Nikita, and Tony kept bringing up they need to finish this in a cage, they need to finish this in a cage, and it kind of set the where we're at now. So we're in the Omni. This is a cage match he was referencing. Flair has beaten Nikita. The Russians come out and they start beating down on Flair, and Dusty comes in and saves the day, and Flair starts yelling at Dusty. And another cool callback is in our last episode, if you remember, Ric Flair said, "Dusty, I don't need your help. Stay out of my business." Well, here's kind of the payoff to this. Dusty's in there yelling with Flair. All of a sudden, the Andersons come out and attack him. You know, they lock the cage. Flair comes off the top rope and injures Dusty's legs as the cage is locked. He has him in a figure four. All the faces are trying to get in the ring, and they finally get in the cage. The faces run right to Dusty, and the heels bail after beating up a few of the faces. We then saw what we saw last week with the great realism, sense of urgency on Dusty. And Dusty goes into a plane to see his doctor, his Swanick. And then we cut to David Crockett interviewing the doctor. It's a third-degree April sprain, similar to a break. And he keeps saying lots of disruption to the tissue and swelling, not really calling it a clean break, of course. The recovery time is unpredictable. We see Dusty with faces in the locker room being taped up by what I call Dr. David Crockett. David's wrapping him up like he's the doctor, so that popped me a little bit. There's an ice bag there. And he goes, there's less – and then he started talking about – did you know less swelling you start with, less to get rid of? So I don't think any of us knew that if you had less swelling, that it would be less hard to get rid of. So I thought that was pretty funny and made me laugh. And then we get to a point where he coughs about severe stretch pain sprains, and he has to go in a cast, and hence why we have the cast on Dusty. So a lot to unpack here. Huge, huge angle to pay this off to start us on our journey to the main event of Starrcade 85. Colm, I will start with you. What did you think of this whole thing and how it played out?
Excellent is the short answer. The whole thing from start to finish was superb. I've got a note there, as you say, Sean, that last month Flair did like explicitly said to Dusty, in no uncertain terms, "I do not need your help." That's the follow up to that. One note that I've got here is that. As much as I like seeing quote unquote flippy shit, you don't need 450s or any elaborate moves. It's just as effective seeing a knee directly to somebody's ankle coming off the top rope, because that would hurt like hell. The reason that Drew is probably as popular as he is, with myself anyway, is that if you take his finisher at the most basic, it's just kicking a guy in the head as hard as you can. There's no finesse to it. Like, Randy Orton gets really over every time he punts somebody in the side of the head. There's no finesse to it, but you know it's going to hurt. It's more real that way, it seems. But just looking at the aftermath, of the crowd is rabid. It's absolutely excellent. There's fans trying to keep the Andersons in the ring. There's police involved at ringside, and even with the doctor, and he's explaining the sprained ankle. Like, I've sprained my ankle a couple of times, and I get a really bad one. It's never quite been right since. So I know that it hurts like hell. Everything about it was excellent. He notes that the treatment that he got initially was was second to none. So I thought that obviously we don't need a stretcher if you get Terry Taylor and the Rock and Roll Express there to carry him out. But the whole thing was just from start to finish was so well done. The seriousness that Tony and Bob Caudle gave it, the whole doing it over multiple segments just to make sure it got the time that it deserved, and the doctor getting interviewed, and just everything about it made it seem real. It made it seem like a proper incident. I cannot say enough good things about this.
Yeah, in literally less than 6 minutes of TV to put this whole thing over, which was also pretty incredible. So, Dr. G, what did you think of this segment?
Callum, I agree with everything you say here. It's just wonderfully done, the way they build up this whole angle. And, you know, when you see that, you know, the video and you see that crowd, I mean, that's real. I mean, these crowds, and if you hear some of these guys in interviews talk, I mean, it was hard to get out of those arenas some nights because, you know, those people took it seriously. And again, Dusty was so beloved. And for younger fans, I could kind of get maybe why, you know, maybe you don't understand the whole Dusty thing. But, you know, when we were kids, he was the man. You know, he was the guy that we rooted for, you know, the underdog. And he just, you know, exuded that, like, I'm the regular guy, even though that, you know, the last we kind of criticized him last time because he was coming out about, you know, his jackets and, you know, his fur coats and his cars and everything. So it was kind of like a little bit out of his character, you know, trying to go back and forth. He and Flair always had their little thing, even in real life. But when it comes to this, this is just so well done. I mean, I don't know where they obviously they must have picked somebody up at the, you know, in the Crockett offices or something and put a, you know, jacket on him and say, hey, you're going to be a doctor today. But I mean,
well, I thought, you know, David Crockett wrapping the leg with tape or whatever was cracking me up. It's like,
oh, man, David Crockett.
Just the Rock and Roll Express carrying him out. Now you have Dr. David Crockett. That was so great.
It's hysterical. I heard David Crockett actually just recently did an interview, I think, with Conrad. I think it's on YouTube.
Did a reunion on the pod. I haven't listened to it yet, though.
Yeah, I'm gonna listen to that because it'd be interesting to see if he gives some perspective if they get into anything around this time, that we could bring into the show.
Scott loves it when you listen to those other pods, Dr. G. So.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah, well, you know, we're going to have to put a pay-per-view on him versus me versus in a hardcore match. We used to do them when we were in college, so.
Yeah, you might have to. Might have to.
The cookie trays didn't do too well after those matches.
Saturday special explodes.
Exactly. But no, this is just so well done. I just agree with you. 6 minutes of television and it just sells a whole angle. And it's just, I just love the realism of it. You know, like, really, you just, you know, even though I, you know, while we're watching this so many years, 35 years later, and I'm like, wow, you know, like, I'm getting into this, like, this seems real, you know, like, you just, you leave, you know, reality for a little while and just get into this storyline. And as we're watching these every month, I can't wait to watch, kind of like I did when, you know, back in even, say, the Attitude Era, when you waited every Monday for Raw to see what they were going to do next. This is how this is all building up, because I don't remember every little aspect of what happened at that time. So it's still, for me, it's like I can't wait to see, okay, what's going to happen in the next week or in the next month. So this is just very well done.
It's the build. Like this for me, this, like I said earlier, this whole incident started with me with the feud. Like if you go all the way back to, you know, May and June and July when Flair started feuding with Nikita, they laid the legwork there was done with that match that we watched in August to get to the cage, and they used that as a jumping point for, like, this, the way it's booked and layered is just unbelievable. If that's, like we said before, how far out they booked. That's pretty freaking incredible how great that is. So,
Stayed consistent with it too. And, you know, think about it. Thank God for the way these guys were going. There wasn't a lot of injuries because, could you imagine if there was an injury to someone, you know, kind of like, you know, when TA gets in his major accident and that really threw a wrench into their
you would be able to book that kind of long-term stuff because of the style they wrestled nowadays. But yeah, this is just fantastic stuff.
It really is.
So Logan, what did you think about this whole thing?
Yeah, just like the other boys have said, this was absolutely fantastic. And I had actually seen this part in previous watches of Starrcade 85, because that's kind of where this leads eventually. But yeah, I had seen this attack in the cage, and just the Andersons are relentless, and they just keep going after Dusty's leg, and them and Flair just are constantly just beating down Dusty really good. And yeah, this is a really fantastic segment, and the only bad part about it was I thought Crockett came off as kind of a dope, because anytime he asked the doctor any questions, he kind of just didn't seem like he understood what he was saying, so he kind of asked the same question two or three times, but he never really acted like he understood what the doctor was saying. And I don't know if this particular doctor was an actor, but I always wondered if any of these doctors were real, how they felt about these kind of BS wrestling injuries that they had to kind of talk about, regardless of the fact of whether some of them were real or, you know, some of them were kind of, you know, a little bit fake, you know. But yeah,
Logan, just fantastic. How dare you question the validity of Dr. Hiswani and Dr. David Crockett?
I'm so sorry. I'll send an apology letter. Yeah, just a fantastic segment. Just awesome taking out of Dusty, and just really puts over how ruthless the Andersons can be.
Awesome. So yeah, so great way to open up 10/19. So that takes us to our final watch of the night, which is the World Championship Wrestling Saturday Night Show. We actually are going to open it with a promo from Jim Cornette. So we've heard a lot. We've seen a lot with the Street People and the Midnight Express. So we get a quick Cornette promo, and it seems like, based on this promo for me, that Rocky King's time in this feud is done. Cornette says, everyone wants to knock the Midnight Express off, and Jimmy Valiant can't find anyone to do it. Valiant tried to make a star of that goof Rocky King and couldn't do it. Everyone knew Rocky was a joke. Nobody has guts, so you get Big Mama to slap me. And Jim says his mama is very upset that a hooker wants to beat up her little boy. Says Valiant and Big Mama are a problem, and the Midnight Express will take care of them. So I will go to Dr. G. What did you think about Rocky King's short-lived life in this? It seems like they bailed on that one pretty quick. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I guess he wasn't really filling. I don't know if they had something in mind for him. So I thought that was, you know, all of a sudden he's gone, and Jim Cornette calling Big Mama a hooker, like you said, it, you know, that
to beat
probably
up her
doesn't
little
go over
boy.
It doesn't go over too well today, but you know, say what you want about him. You know, even now he's just kind of gotten, you know, he hates everything now, but he was really good back then. I mean, he just, again, one of those people you want to just beat the hell out of, just every time he does a promo, but he really puts that heat on the team. Because if you think about it, you know, Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton weren't great talkers, so they needed Cornette. But he made, even though Midnight Express, don't get me wrong, Bobby Eaton especially is just a phenomenal wrestler, but he made that team. Like, the Midnight Express would not be what they are without Jim Cornette. And both versions, even though Stan Lane was a little bit of better talker than Bobby Eaton and Dennis Condrey.
I think we called him like the drunk homeless uncle. He just looks really like they pulled him off the street, but he's actually very talented. Condrey is. So
yes, no, he's very good in the ring, but you know, think about the Midnight Express. If they didn't have Cornette, would they be the same team?
No.
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not.
And he's just, you know, again, you know, maybe you don't totally like what he said in the promo, but just the way his delivery and just the way he just gets you so angry just in that, you know, little bit more than a minute, you just want to punch the guy in the face. You want to beat him up. He's the guy that you want to take out, and you want to take out his team because he's just so arrogant and you know, just a little mama's boy. And he played that role very, very well.
Yeah, this promo I didn't mind as much as the last one from the last episode we talked about that was disturbing. I almost wonder if they moved away from Rocky King in this to get away from what they had started with that promo from our last episode where they were talking about, I don't like your kind of people. And I wonder if they got Rocky King out of this so they could steer away from kind of the racial stuff that they were kind of presenting. I wonder if that kind of hindered Rocky in this and he wanted to get away from it. So that might have been why they ran away from it, because they knew they had dug themselves a big hole with that really, really not a good promo at all in that last episode that bothered all of us. So, Logan, what did you think of this short promo from Cornette and obviously the demise of Rocky King as the street people?
Yeah, I don't think he really got away from the racism, because the one line that I wrote down was that he called King a refugee from the Little Rascals, and I thought that was like a really roundabout way of being racist.
Maybe.
So I thought that was kind of, well, I mean, that's how I took it, but I'm not sure if that's what he meant. But yeah, Cornette's just crazy and wild as always. But yeah, I loved how he tried so hard not to call Big Mama, you know, a prostitute or a hooker, but he eventually had to. But yeah, this was a pretty good one by Cornette.
Yep. And Colin, what'd you think? Kind of closes out the street people, but we know there's more to come, just no Rocky King.
yeah, I mean, standard Cornette stuff. Thankfully, less offensive than last month. So he's making progress slowly but surely. But yeah, I know roughly where it was going for Starcade. I don't quite know how we get from here to there, yeah, it closes out the street people we had in the new year, because it was strange that they got together and strange that they've just sort of now disappeared in the blink of an eye. But I did make note of the right after the Cornette interview that they were doing the run through of the next shows, as they always do in the ad breaks. Between the end of October and the start of November, they were interestingly in Long Island, Hartford, and New Haven. So I thought that was quite interesting that they're making their way north this early. I didn't think they started to do that until much later than this.
They were in the Meadowlands quite a bit in like 84 and 85. I know they had big shows up in the Meadowlands.
But I never realized, good, you know, I was going to bring that up, and then I wasn't sure if anybody really cared because this is the area I'm from. I didn't realize that they went up to Connecticut back then. Again, I was living in Florida at the time, but, you know, I didn't realize they made their way into WWE territory. I know Meadowlands is kind of WWE territory, but I never realized they went right into Connecticut. And New Haven was always almost a monthly place for WWE.
It was one of these ones. I was writing down my notes. I watched the interview, and then I was writing down my notes on it. And it's just Tony going, "Yeah, on the 6th of November we'll be in Long Island, New York, and on the 4th of November we'll be in Hartford, Connecticut." Wow. And my ears pricked up, and I'm just like, "Oh wow!" I thought because obviously TBS is national, but I didn't think they were making their way north into deepest McMahon territory until later than this. So it brought my attention.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know about going up into Connecticut. I knew they were in the New York area per se, but yeah, the further up they go, that's definitely WWF territory. So I wasn't aware that they were all that far up in Connecticut either. So, but yeah, I mean, they're certainly getting hot enough to where you would think that, you know, they would like approach it or maybe test the waters a little bit. But that's a good call, because typically when I watch these, I cut away from the promos and stuff because I'll get too entranced with what they say in those promos as they sell a market. But those are always fun watches too. All right, so we're going to move on from Jim Cornette. We have our first Starcade 85 update, and I don't remember this stuff either. So Roger Kent, who I guess was an announcer, he wasn't around too long, but anyway, he's sitting in this like cool lounge setting, and he has the Superstar sign on a wall behind him, so almost like a talk show setting. And he's talking about Starcade 85 as part of the 50th anniversary of Crockett. He takes us through the first Starcade of Flair and Race. Then he takes us through Starcade 84. And then he introduces Jim Crockett. And Jim Crockett says they have worked over the last year on Starcade 85 because they have so many fans. We are actually doing two cities, which are Greensboro and Atlanta, with four giant screens so everyone can see both cities with 10 matches. They announced the tag title match, and out of the blue, we find out the Russians are the new world tag team champions. So that kind of shocked me right out of the gate. So I guess we'll hear more about that on our next episode. But they will face the Rock and Roll Express in a cage. Apparently, they won the titles on a house show in North Carolina on 10/13. So more to come on that from the Rock and Rolls later. But we do see footage of the title change where the ref is down. The Rock and Rolls use a chain to clothesline suplex crusher to go for the pin, but there's no ref. The Russians throw Ricky into a turnbuckle with the chain on it, and the ref recovers, and Ivan takes the chain down, which I guess I didn't really understand. It was a chain match, so there really was no DQ, but they did the three count anyway, and then we have new World Tag Team Champions. There will be a world title defense, and the participants will be named on November the 3rd. Then they play the Gathering video, and I love the Staying Alive music theme from the Gathering, which is an amazing song. It's Far From Over by Frank Stallone. So, yeah, so what did you guys think of this? So I will go – what did you think of this little promo for Starrcade? So I will go to Logan first.
Yeah, I thought it was a really kind of good history lesson from the previous Starrcade, and the guy kind of reminded me of like a bigger Mean Gene. He almost kind of sounded like him, honestly. But yeah, just kind of announcing that it's going to be in two separate cities is definitely an interesting idea. We'll see how it kind of plays, or y'all will see how it kind of plays out when it happens. But yeah, the Russians winning the tag titles from the Rock and Roll Express kind of surprised me as well. Yeah, they kind of announced that Flair's definitely going to have a match, but they didn't really go into who, even though we kind of totally know who it's going to end up being. But, yeah, I thought this was a pretty cool little segment, kind of getting you hyped for Starrcade that's coming up.
Yep. I did, too. Again, I don't remember these segments, and we get quite a few of these over the next few weeks, but, yeah, I thought it was really cool. Callum, what'd you think of this?
Yeah, I thought it was a nice build-up. To it. It's almost in the same vein that you would have the like Mean Gene in the event center, but it was more of the, as you say, more of the talk show, more of the talk show atmosphere. I thought it was a nice way to build everything up and get your set the scene for your obviously your two arenas and your big matches. I started to panic a bit when they said that it'll be the Koloffs defending the World Tag Team Championships. I'm thinking, oh no, I've missed something here, and I'm looking frantically looking back on the notes and all the stuff that you sent us through, thinking I've completely missed something here, and then the show is the finish.
Yeah, it came out of the blue. I didn't know it was coming.
Yeah. Because I look back at your champions roll call, and it still said that the Rock and Roll Express were the champions. I'm thinking, no, I'm not watching the right thing here. Mm-hmm. And then it showed you the finish, which I thought was absolutely genius, where the chain is on the turnbuckle pad. I thought that was one thing I'm finding here is like you've not got a cookie cutter finish that you can that's just a rinse and repeat. A lot of the finishes are sort of unique and you don't tend to see the same finish twice in big matches. I thought that one especially was
just, where they just slingshot him into the chain, and I actually thought the Rock and Roll Express the chain, the clothesline suplex they did, I thought that was actually pretty well done too. So yeah, it was a really cool finisher. I agree with you. It was a great finish.
Yeah, so it was, and so overall, I thought it's setting the scene nicely for what's to come.
Okay, Dr. G, what'd you think? And you know, and obviously, you probably know the song that's in this, "Far From Over" by Frank Stallone. It's quite the banger and quite famous video promo here for the Starrcade. But what'd you think of this segment?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Starrcade when I hear that song, but. Logan, you and I are really on the same page because you went before me, but I was I had it on while I was working, and so sometimes I'm not always watching. And I hear it, I'm like, what is Mean Gene doing? I thought it was.
I actually had to look up who he was. I didn't even know who he
was. And I looked over and I'm like, wait, that's not Mean Gene. But he did sound like Mean Gene. I had that written down. I thought it was Mean Gene. I thought they tricked me at first. And I, you know, Sean, I agree. I don't remember these segments. But, you know, I think it was a good build. You know, sometimes we think WWE did all these things first, but I didn't realize how much really Crockett kind of led the way on some of these things, including the whole thing with the, you know, two arenas. I mean, I know for WrestleMania 2, they did the three arenas.
Which a few months later, after Starrcade, they did that.
Right. Yeah. So I forgot that actually Jim Crockett kind of did something like that first. So, you know, we do give Vince just did it better. We give Vince a lot of credit for starting a lot of these things, but I think some of the things started with Crockett. Now that I'm watching some of the stuff, you know, in order, and again, like I said, Vince did it better. But the Jim Crockett, when they interview him, is it me? He just does not seem comfortable. Like he's
kind of a toolbox.
he seems constipated.
Yeah. At least David Crockett's funny. You know, I know he gets criticized. He's always like voted the worst announcer and, you know, in the Observer and all that. But
I disagree.
But at least he's funny. Yeah. You know, he adds some fun to the show. So like, even if you think he's goofy, I mean, his brother has no personality whatsoever. I like the way they did this in terms of this, like, you know, interview segment, make it seem big, you know, like with this big announcement. And I was shocked too, because at Callum, I was like, wait a second, when did this happen? I thought I was watching something out of order too. I had to go back to, you know, the stuff Sean sent us. So it was kind of came out of nowhere. And I have to say, I thought the Rock and Roll Express had some pretty good matches. You know, the little bit that we see with the Russians.
Well, the Russians, know, and then they had a good match with the Rising Suns we watched too. So they've been very impressive in their matches, I think.
Definitely. So just good stuff, and it again gets you pumped up for Starrcade.
Yeah. So after watching this promo, I was definitely fired up and excited to kind of see the journey as we get there, as we're starting to see the groundwork laid. So the next segment we're going to watch, this might be my favorite all-time Arn Anderson moment. But anyway, so we go to Tony's at ringside with Dusty, and Dusty's on crutches in a cast with his TV title. Dusty says two things you need to be said about the situation. Thank the fans for the mini cards, and then he apologized publicly for his misstates due to being hurt. Suddenly, you hear a yell, and Tully and Arn kick the crutches from under Dusty and steal the TV title as Dusty falls to the ground. And Tony just stands there like a dope with the mic in his hand and says, "What in the world is going on?" as David Crockett runs to Dusty. So I laughed my ass off here, and I probably shouldn't have. We go to break, we come back. Tony and David they're back for commercial, and David is very angry and goes, "When is this all going to stop? We were all so concerned about Dusty. We forgot they stole his belt." David calls them cowards. "I was more concerned about Dusty than I was the title." Tony says, "What will some men stoop to?" as Crockett makes his Crockett angry faces, and he's so angry. And then he says, "Maybe Ron Bass can take care of the guy in the ring." And we're about to start a U.S. title match between Ron Bass and Tully Blanchard, with Tully looking smug. But before we start the match, I would like to go around the horn and talk about this great, great moment of Dusty falling on his ass, the announcers standing around looking like dopes, and then, you know, they just take the TV title. Callum, what did you think of these two segments?
I thought, again, wonderful stuff. I had an interesting note that they were doing it at the ring with Dusty's back to the, like, to the apron, instead of the podium. I thought that was, like, I've got a note of this, interesting psychology. It's so he can't be jumped, or am I looking too much into it? Because then next thing you know, he sees it coming, so he can't be jumped from behind, but he sees it coming. And then Arn, just with the ultimate, like with a fantastic dick move, just kicks him right in the cast, and down he goes. And then as quick as you like, steals the belt. And you can hear Tully as he's walking off just cackling. I thought it was great. And then you get
that would be Tully and I both cackling at this. By the way,
it was just so good altogether. And then you've got obviously David Crockett just being his wonderful best. I think
have our stroke out moment. This was a good one.
Oh yeah, I think it was just the whole thing was because it wasn't very. It was again as you say, it wasn't very long at all, but to get the point across brilliantly, I think it was just excellent again.
That whole segment with kicking the crutches and stealing the title was 1:02. That's how great that was. So
there you go. I mean, it's not rocket science. Comes in, says a couple of things. What are you doing here? Bang! There's your kick to the injury, steal the belt. It doesn't need to be any longer than it has. Yep. It doesn't outstay its welcome.
Yep. And Dr. G, what did you think?
You know, excellent stuff. You thought that it was more than a minute just because so much happened in that time. But I just love
1:02 on it.
I was so concerned for Dusty. I didn't even realize he took his belt.
Whereas Tony just stood there. He didn't give two shits. He's just like, oh, what's going Tony's on? Like,
it was almost like Tony didn't know what the heck they were going to be doing. You know, like it was just like he was truly shocked.
That's why it was so good. It probably made it better.
It's just so well done. And just Arn is just he's on top of his game here. I just love it. Love it. Love it. All this stuff.
We always mark out for the Andersons, but God damn it. We don't have much of a choice.
No. And you know, but Dusty plays his role good too. He plays the victim very well. You know, he knows how to get on the heartstrings of the fans. So it's just all well done. And you know, he was booking this stuff. So it's just good stuff. I mean, you know, Dusty, for as many bad ideas as we know, we've heard of throughout the years, he had some really, really good stuff that he booked. And he and Anderson just really were totally in sync. And I know they have a lot of respect. They had, you know, when Dusty was live, they had a lot of respect for each other.
Yep. Absolutely. So Logan, wrap us up on this. What did you think of this whole segment with Dusty falling on his ass, the TV title, and then the announcers flipping out about it? What'd you think?
Yeah, you weren't alone in laughing. I kind of cracked up when they kicked the cat or they kicked the crutch out from under him and he kind of busted his ass. So don't feel bad. But yeah,
I don't feel bad. I thought it was amazing. So
yeah. I'll go back to something that Dr. G said in the last segment pertaining to David Crockett. You know, he might not have been the best, and he might be kind of a goof, but he at least brings a lot of energy to stuff. So I really appreciate that from him. He might be a little spastic and, you know, kind of goofy at some points, but at least he brings the energy that his brother completely lacks, apparently.
Yep. So really good stuff. They've building the Starrcade. Now the TV title's in play. They've followed up on the Arn stuff and the TV title with Arn. So really, really good, solid storytelling, I feel like we've seen over the course of these episodes. So our final watch tonight, we have another title match for the U.S. title. So we've had two matches tonight for the roster's two main belts, which I think is pretty cool as well. So we have Ron Bass versus Tully Blanchard. So they start the match. Bass gets a power slam, which I really thought was cool to start. And then Shitheel Tully bails out. James J. Dillon joins commentary in probably one of the ugliest wine-colored jackets I've ever seen. JJ talks about his men. Buddy Landell wants the national title. But Bart has to be dealt with first. Bass gets the claw on Tully, but Baby Doll pulls Tully out. JJ says karma caught up with Dusty. Bass with elbows and punches. The studio crowd is thrilled. I mean, they're just going ballistic. There's a knee and a backdrop. Tully grabs Bass's tights to throw him out of the ring. Bass gets claw on Tully from outside as David just goes out of his mind on this claw. Baby Doll acting outside is something as she's freaking out outside. Tully kicks Bass inside. Bass once inside the ring and get a chin lock. The crowd's chanting, go Bass, go. And, you know, just like Valiant, Bass got nuclear crowd going for him right now. Tully hits an elbow to back on the neck off the top rope. He controls for a while as we go to commercial with a headbutt for Bass. Back for commercial, we get Bass suplexed into the ring for a two count. Which Crockett was definitely feeling that suplex as Tony also starts joining in the David Crockett excitement. There's another back neck elbow by Tully. Black Bart comes out with JJ in tow. The Bass gets an abdominal stretch, and then Bass gets a jumping kick to the back and a Boston Crab. Baby Doll jumps up on Rope to distract Bass, but Tully is met with multiple punches and head slams to the mat. He goes for the claw, but Tully kneads him to the back again, which was a cool kind of move to kind of escape. So it's kind of like the little things there. Punches and forearms, elbows by Tully. Bass counters with a choke, kick off the rope, and a neck breaker. Tully with more punches, an eye rake, and then there's another Bass rope choke. Snaps Tully back with a falling headbutt for two. Tully jumps off the rope into a claw. Baby Doll runs in for a DQ. She argues with Bass, and then Tully kneads him out of the ring. Then Bart attacks, and then with Tully, kind of a cool thing here where Tully does an impressive slingshot suplex, and then Bart does a leg drop right after the suplex, which reminded me of the Power and Glory move that they did with the suplex and splash. I thought that was kind of a cool-looking visual there, even though, unfortunately, it was Black Bart involved. And then a Job Squad and Valiant come out for the save as they lay next to Bass, and they all look confused as they all look around, like confused little orphans, like to make sure they protect Bass. So, yeah, this match was pretty darn good. I actually went 2.5 stars. I thought it looked pretty stiff. I thought they worked well together. And even though we got a DQ, I really popped for the attack afterwards. I really loved the slingshot leg drop probably way more than I should have. Dr. G, what'd you think of this match?
Sean, I went 2.5 stars myself. You know, I thought that they actually did work pretty well together. You wouldn't probably think about it when you look at it on paper. Mm-hmm. You know, Ron Bass wasn't bad. You know, he you know, for me, watched him a lot in Florida, and he was a heel. He's a better heel to me, you know, but he still wrestled heel, even though he was face here. But, you know, I just a solid match. Again, nothing like to, you know, I'd say, you know, put him in a GWCW type of thing. But, you know, I definitely think, again, telling a story, they love to put those, you know, was it the championship series matches on every week. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, and, you know, you would think, oh, you know, on television, they're only going to give you like, you know, 3-4 minutes or 5 minutes. But, you know, what would this match, what would you say, about 20 minutes, you know, 19 minutes?
Yeah, it was a long match. It was pretty long.
Yeah. So, you know, but, you know, because you know how we when we were kids, you always, you know, you knew maybe you were going to get one, you know, pretty good match, not a squash match on television. At least they give you a little something. It's not just, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. They're giving you some, you know, some substance. And again, you know, the crowd was into it, I thought, in the studio. And, you know, you had a lot of shenanigans towards the end. You know, it was pretty true about the whole Black Bart thing. I thought the move at the end was kind of nice. It was, you know, even though it was Black Bart, but, mm-hmm. You know, it just one of those things, you know, because it still kept the Black Bart Ron Bass storyline going. Mm-hmm. I like how they did that, how they intertwined, where maybe they may put two guys, you know, like Bass and Blanchard really weren't totally feuding with each other, put them together, and then add in who that person that they're fighting with, you know, that they're really in a feud with, kind of inserting them into the match somehow, and kind of, you know, keeping another storyline going. So
they kind of built another match within this match that you're going to see at Starrcade. So it's really cool how they did that.
Exactly. So, because yeah, you know, he used to be partners with Black Bart, you know, in JJ mm-hmm. Dillon's stable. So it, you know, just kind of adds to it. Again, simple booking, nothing crazy, just, you know, two guys that don't like each other now because they used to be on the same side and one person left. And now that, you know, Black Bart's not happy with that, and neither is JJ Dillon. So they want to get their revenge, and, you know, Ron Bass wants to get his revenge back on them. So, you know, just a simple storyline.
Yep. Logan, what did you think of Bass versus Blanchard?
Yeah, I really like this one. I went 2.5 like y'all guys did. y'all are talking about Dylan. I know y'all have talked about how weird it is that he's managing somebody other than the Horsemen, but that just weirded me out a lot. But as far as the match, I love that Bass kind of went for the kill immediately. He immediately goes for the claw, and Tully has to kind of use some use Baby Doll to kind of get him out of it the first time. But I really like how Bass kind of kicked Tully's ass for like the first few minutes, and he kind of uses the tights to kind of slingshot him out of the ring at one point. That was a kind of cool little underhanded technique he used. There was a couple of brutal moves that I pointed out in my notes. Bass hits a pretty brutal headbutt at one point, and then there's a pretty impressive suplex that Bass hits after they come back from commercial. And then Tully goes on the second rope at one point and hits a pretty brutal elbow. I thought that was pretty good. Baby Doll tries to distract Bass at certain points in the match, but it seems like Bass has Tully scouted pretty well. So I thought that was it showed that Bass had really kind of studied Blanchard and how he kind of operated. But towards the end of the match, Tully's kind of desperation to kind of go for covers anytime he got him down was good to see, and that's showing that desperation to make sure you keep your title is impressive. Bass did a lot of offense right in front of Baby Doll. I thought that was funny and kind of a dickhead move by him. He was kind of showing that he was kicking her charge's ass right in front of her. The fight afterwards was pretty good, and the move that you talked about I liked a lot.
All right. And Callum, wrap it up. What'd you think?
Seeing just the same things that the guys were saying. I did like the people, even before the match starts, Bass is gunning for Tully, because pointing outside the ring, and he's furious about what Tully has just been involved with Dusty. So like everyone is, as you say, everyone's sort of involved in everything in their own small way. Everything is intertwined, and it's even in small ways like that. David Crockett with an excellent line. He goes, "There's Tully's best attribute. He can run faster backwards than he can going forwards when he's running away from Bass." So David, again, just top of his game. I as you said, I don't get the hate for him as an announcer, because he's much, much better than he ever gets credit for.
I agree.
You can't beat a good Tully shit kicking. We'd seen a small change in it. But when he was getting a bit more offense in. But back to where we were at the start. But it's never a bad thing. I thought the match was good. I gave it 2.5. Despite the presence in spite of the presence of Black Bart, I thought it was really good.
It's pretty amazing tonight that, I mean, at least for Colin, Dr. G, and I, that stuff we like tonight included Jimmy Valiant and Black Bart in some form or fashion. So I don't know what's happening to us. Maybe we're coming soft, or maybe they just got him involved in stuff that was pretty damn good. I don't know which one it was. So, but Logan liked it too, so it can't be a shit take. So thank you, Logan, for the save on that. I appreciate it. I appreciate that. So guys, that'll end our watch for this week. However, before we go, Jim Crockett comes out and says next week on the championship series, we will get a Southern heavyweight title match with the Barbarian facing Colin's favorite wrestler, Wahoo McDaniel, who won the belt from Rick Rude back on October the 2nd, 1985. So we have that to look forward to on the next episode, Colin.
Look forward to is a bit of a stretch. I mean, what of the two people, of everybody in the Crockett locker room, they could think to put with Wahoo, Barbarian. They turn round and go the Barbarian. There's a good chance, anybody listening to just now, there's a good chance that I won't be on the next podcast.
There is a good chance that match could suck, and I might agree with you, but I'm not going to give you a peek under the tent. So I'll leave it at that. So guys, with that ends our first half of October 85. So really quite the journey, quite a lot of storylines with Arn and Dusty and Flair and the Midnight Express and Valiant. We got a couple of really good matches, and so really, really solid first half of October. So before we go, Logan, what did you think of – this is kind of your first real big exposure to kind of Crockett TV. What did you think of the first half of October overall as a whole in your first experience with this?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, Arn was awesome as always, and Tully as well. I've kind of listened to y'all's previous episodes and how y'all kind of talk about Jimmy Valiant and not so positive of light, but I, you know, his zaniness and craziness kind of entertained me on these couple of episodes that we looked at. So, I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to doing the second half.
Excellent. So, and then Column, and I'll go to Column and then Dr. G. So Column, this is kind of our first official kind of road to Starrcade and starts us on the road to November. What'd you think of the build and what we saw tonight so far?
I'm thoroughly looking forward to seeing where it's gonna continue to go, because we've got we've had the build up to Flair and Dusty, which we've all gushed about. We've got the continued build for Magnum and Tully, and we've had the I think we were all taken aback by the Koloffs beating the Russians. So it's all heating up nicely, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes for here.
Okay, and then lastly, Dr. G, because you and I are both kind of reliving this, and a lot of stuff we didn't remember, a lot of stuff we did. So how do you feel about so far the first half of the build, kind of really to where we're going with Starrcade so far?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, some stuff that I didn't remember that I'm really enjoying, and I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how it plays out in the second half, you know, just because I haven't watched it yet. So I'm probably starting tomorrow. I'll start watching that part of it. And I just love the build. It brings you back to the time when there wasn't a pay-per-view every month, and you could really do a cool build over months, period of months, to get you to the payoff. And then sometimes even after the payoff, you think it's going to be a payoff. The in certain instances, the feud still continue. But I just love watching this stuff. I mean, it's just simple booking, but and to say that we really didn't shit on much tonight. You know what I'm saying? Like
Terry Taylor we shit on. We didn't shit on Terry Taylor.
Pretty much. That was, you know, but Valiant, I mean, we didn't even really totally go there. He was entertaining enough to that we didn't rip him too much, you know. But I guess it was because you know, he did get beat down in one segment, so I guess.
Well, we didn't shit on Bart really either. We didn't shit on Black Bart. We didn't shit on it. Yeah.
Listen, everybody has a good week, and you know, for the most part, most of the storylines are pretty solid. They keep you interested enough to where you're not like tuning out, like sometimes we do today. So it's like, I feel like at least we're paying attention to it, more than you think. You know, you look at it on paper and you're like, oh, even like this, I'm like, oh, Tully and Ron Bass, what kind of match is this going to be? You know, when I saw it before I started watching it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad. You know, it was a good match. 2.5 stars. I mean, I think that's pretty good.
Yep.
And it's a TV match for 19 minutes that, you know, like I said, a lot of times when they do that on television, on all the wrestling programs, you're lucky you get 5 minutes. At least they gave you 19 minutes, and, you know, and then they created another match out of that.
And not a whole lot of Flair tonight. Usually we're popping for the Flair promos. The only thing we got was Flair and the whole Cage debacle. So it'll be interesting to see. I know what's coming in October. So the second half of this podcast, we actually have two Flair matches from Japan, and one is a title match, but it's a title for title match that we're going to talk about, which is probably one of the most famous matches over in Japan that they had at the time. So we'll get two Flair matches, and of course we have the wonderful Southern title match that Callum's looking forward to with Wahoo McDaniel.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have more Rock and Roll Express. We'll have more Valiant and Midnight Express and where that goes. That takes a very interesting turn. And we get our first kind of Dusty Flair promo together in terms of talking about what happened here tonight. So a lot of stuff to look forward to on the second half of NWA Crack and Roll October 85. So with that, I'll go around the horn real quick and see if there's anything anybody wants to plug. I know Logan already talked about his pods earlier in the episode, but Colm, anything you want to shout out before we end tonight?
I think since just the Christmas episode, if you've not listened to it, or the Christmas episode of the Special Relations has been out since our last episode got released, I believe. Over the Christmas period, the days got all. In fact, it won't have. I don't know. Over the Christmas period, all the days sort of meld into one. But if you've not listened to it already, please go back and listen to the Christmas episode of the Special Relations, where we go through our most referenced pay-per-view of on the Happy Place segment of SummerSlam 1989. We live watch that with a few guests, two of which are on the call just now, one of which was quite inebriated by the end of the night.
Logan's clearly can't handle his alcohol. So.
I was lit on that one.
We were both lit to the point of where I couldn't even do the plugs right for which podcast I was on. So anyway, it was a good time. Good time on the Special Relations pod for Christmas. So, and Dr. G, anything on your end?
The NWA Saturday special drops every Saturday at 9 a.m. So you could get it and enjoy your coffee. And Scott and I will find something to fight about usually. And we're going to be talking about some, NWA news, the current NWA. And, we'll see. Maybe we might go into a little bit of the GWCW ballots just to and talk about some of the matches, depending on what's going to happen with the new NWA. Hopefully we'll start getting some stuff soon, but if not, we'll make it happen. We'll fill the time. There's a lot to talk about because you could always, it's the lineage to the original NWA, and there's plenty of stuff to talk about, even though we do it pretty good on this show. But it's just, good stuff that you could continue, and you could always break down into different things. You could talk about Starcade, you could talk about the different championships, which we've done already, and we could continue to do so. Catch that, and then obviously I really love this podcast, so we thank you for listening, and keep telling your friends about it, because if this is good stuff, if you're looking for something, we're still kind of being semi-quarantined and all around the world right now. If you're bored, watch some of these matches, listen to our podcast, and you will you'll get a lot out of it.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of the podcasts on the PTPN, they're just great listens. A lot of great talent that does it for free, and they just have a good time talking about it. So give everybody a listen. Of course, give us a listen, but give everybody a listen too. And by the way, if you want to get Scott into an argument, just start shitting on Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. That'll probably get him going pretty quick, because it always does when I do it with him, Dr. G. So
yeah, all right, good.
All right,
we'll definitely have some fun with that.
All right, yeah, mention to him that if Sean had done a list, Ricky Steamboat wouldn't have been in the top 10 of any matches. That'll really piss him off. So,
oh, okay, good.
All right,
you got me going. I'll do that.
but anyway, guys, thank you. I look forward to us getting together in 2 weeks where we talk about the second half of October. And Logan, thank you. It was great having you on, and I'm glad you're going to be on the next episode too to round up October. So until then, everybody, we will see you in 2 weeks.